This week on Work in Programming, I got the opportunity to catch up with an old friend, Ivan Imufa, about his transition from being a plumber to working in programming, teaching himself to code in just 1 year, how his last 2 years working at Punchcard Systems have been, how he thinks about working with clients, and all of the different topics that came along with that. It was a great episode for me personally. I got to catch up with an old friend, and I believe that a lot of useful advice came out of this for anyone interested in getting into coding and who is interested in looking to pursue a fruitful career that can grow pretty rapidly. He's a skilled developer and an even better presenter. So I think this was an excellent conversation. I hope you enjoy.
My name's Ivan. I live in Edmonton, Alberta. I am a web developer, mobile developer, developer. I didn't go to school. I used to be a plumber, actually. I did that for 5 years. I dropped out of school because that's what I wanted to do. I moved to Alberta. I picked up a trade. I thought it was going to be good. I hated it, but it paid nicely. One day when I was working like an hour and a half outside of where I was living, I just realized I couldn't keep doing this. Like, I couldn't keep working in the trades. It's just not sustainable. And I quit my job and taught myself how to code, which is pretty crazy. I also, after that, like, it was like a year of not having a job. I applied to Punchcard, which is where I work at right now. And they, after like two interview things, they hired me on as a junior developer, and I've been developing ever since. It's been like two years, almost 3 years now.
And so I'm curious, like, okay, so what was that like one moment that you decided, like, what made you decide programming? Like, was it just you saw other people doing it, or?
I wanted to do something with computers. I knew that when I was plumbing, I didn't know what exactly. And I knew I wanted, like, I didn't want to plumb. Like, I didn't want to work in construction. I didn't want to work in the trades much longer. So I tried to find things that I would be able to teach myself that would be marketable, like, you know, going further. I actually didn't even think about coding for a while. Up until I was sitting on YouTube and there was like this, I think it was like a 5 or 6 minute thing where it's like, learn about JavaScript. And I was like, okay, you know what? Why not? Let's just open it up. And I watched it and they put some stuff on the screen and it moved. And I'm like, okay, I'm sold. and like, as I was like getting into it and learning more about like programming, coding, there were like similarities between construction and what I was doing and like how certain systems work how certain things work when you're programming or coding. And I was like, I might have some transferable skills I might be able to move over. So I was like, cool, let's do it. Let's try it out. And then I got hooked after I went through this pretty cool tutorial on, I think it was Unity, or no, it was Python. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I got this. It was stupid. It took like one word and then made like three sentences out of it. And I was like, yeah, now I'm fully sold. Like, this is definitely something I want to do. And I just, at that point, I just kind of consumed every bit of like resource there was out on the internet, you know, like blog posts, Medium, Dev2, YouTube, Udemy, like Pluralsight, you name it. I was just like pretty much heads down, like going in through this stuff. It was really fun.
And what did you, like, how'd you focus? Like, what did you choose? Like, did you just pick whatever you saw, or?
Yeah, actually, I just YouTubed this. I started off with Python and I was like, oh, cool. Like, this is cool. Like, the syntax is kind of similar to how we speak in English. So, like, some of the conventions that they're using are pretty not easy to get, but like, once you understand how coding works and like how languages work, you're like, oh, cool. Like, it's just another way to speak, right? But you're speaking to a computer. I was like, I wonder how other languages are like. And then I started jumping from like, I built something in Python, then I built something in C#, and I was like, and then I hopped into JavaScript and I was like, whoa, this is the land. and I kind of just stuck with that ever since. Since I started working at Punchcard, I mostly work with a lot of TypeScript and C#, so, and a lot of SQL, and Azure as well, but those are external tools. yeah, and I just kind of kept doing that for a while.
Well, so what were like the first few projects? Like, what did you get started on? Like, when you first started, what was like, what did they get you doing that like you thought was really interesting? And
oh, do you mean at work yeah. or like?
By... Yeah, like when you just well, I mean, okay, so like you taught yourself how to code. So we could go into that too, but I'm actually like really curious, like what did you work on when you first got there?
So we have this project called Buffalo. Basically there's this company in Alberta that does like pipeline or oil and gas services. So they do x-rays on pipes and x-rays on pipelines throughout Alberta. So it's one of their oldest projects. And basically they onboarded me by giving me like one of the tasks to like go through this project to like solve a bug. They were like, you have like 3 weeks, you know, like it's whatever, like you have questions, let us know. Like if you understand how to set this up, if you're not understanding how this works, like we can pair a program together. So when I first started, I was like, this is super overwhelming. Like, it's a gigantic, there's stuff happening over here, and there's stuff happening on the other side. And you're like, what is going on? And like trying to understand how different people write code, because it's such a big project and it's lived for so long. Like, I think there's like 20-ish people who have touched this, 20, 30 people have touched this project. So you open one file, there's one way someone's writing something. You open the next file, you're like, whoa, we have jumped into a different language here, or like a different way of how we set things up. So when I first started, it was a lot of like pair programming with some of the more senior people and some of the team leads. It was a lot of also like, I would say the first 2 or 3 days, I wasn't coding a lot. It was more so like, here's this team, this is what we do. Like, sit in on some of the meetings, understand how they function as a part of the team for our company, and then moving to different teams and seeing how they work. And then after understanding that, we got like my machine set up, got my environment set up, and then they're like, yeah, here's your first task. And I'm like, oh man, it was stressful.
Still. And did you fix the bug in the 3 weeks probably with their help? And
oh yeah, that felt really good. Cause you know, how do I put this? When you're learning to actually doing it professionally are like two very different things. So like, you know, you're learning, you're like, ah, cool, var A equals whatever. That's great. You do it professionally. Someone's like, var A equals this function that's doing something else, that's manipulating something here. And you just gain a lot of experience on working with other people and understanding how other people write code. It just kind of like, it builds you up. So when you start tackling other problems, you have like different patterns and different ideas of how you can solve something. But yeah, it was fun. It was difficult. It was stressful. Still is stressful, but it's fun.
I guess, it doesn't ever get like less stressful to change. It's not like it's not like you run out of problems. It just like gets harder and harder.
Right. It's like different problems that you face. Because like when I first started, I'm like, oh man, how do I be productive? How do I write code? Like, how do I get my first commit in there? How do I start building features? And then as you go on, you're like, cool, how do I take this user story and turn this into actual code? Great. How do I talk to this client and take what their idea is and put it into a user story that you then put into code? Like, you know, it's
yeah.
The problems grow as you grow, and your scope of your role ends up being a lot more because you understand your role is more than writing code.
Yeah, like you're not just like solving the one little task anymore. Like now you're like working out, you grow past that. You're kind of like managing. I always think of it as like if you have like little building blocks, and then you're like, it's like how you build code too, right? Like you're assembling like smaller components here and there, and then eventually it all gets up and connects. And then you've got these systems that talk to each other. So you've got multiple different entities, I guess. And then you could even think of it like a team, kind of a similar way. Like you've got your individual skills followed by like people skills too. And that's interesting. I like that.
There's a lot to it too. Like, you know, when I first started, I was like, oh, it's all about the code. And then as you go through and you experience, like you get through your career, you realize it's more about like understanding people and like being able to communicate. Because sure, you can write code and that's great, but you know, like being able to communicate with the clients or your teammates or anyone who is that you're trying to explain something or like trying to show somebody something, as long as you can communicate that with other people, that's a pretty good skill to have. So
totally.
Yeah.
Which like, I guess in a way, like you've always been like a great people person. So it's kind of funny because at the end of the day, like that ends up being the end skill that you need to master. And you're like, well, already there.
You know, it's interesting. I never thought I would ever be it. Like, if you asked me this like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, this would not have been a thing. I would have, you know, writing code. Who the me? What the hell is this? You know, like it's crazy to see how like time changes like your perspective and like the things that you find important. So it's just cool to see.
When I remember like meeting, like seeing on LinkedIn that you were like posting about your job and then being like, oh crap, like congrats, man. Like that's a pretty cool accomplishment. And like, it came out of nowhere to me because we hadn't spoken in a while. I'm really impressed. Like, I think like being able to like learn how to code in a year and go to like professional developer is like pretty like fast, like super fast. I mean, you had like 100% focus, it sounds like.
I didn't even think I was going to get to that point. I didn't think they were going to hire me. I rolled into this interview and I'm like, I am prepared to fail, but I am ready to learn and, you know, like take whatever I learned from this interview. And like, hopefully in 6 months and maybe another year, I'll get it. I'll have the confidence in my own skills to apply for an actual position and, you know, ace this interview and stuff. And they were like, oh yeah, you know, we're really happy with your interview. We're really happy about how easy you are to learn. And I'm like, are they hiring me? Holy shit. Oh, I mean, holy crap, they're hiring me. Holy. So the, yeah, I feel really lucky.
So what are you like thinking about? Like, what do you think you have to like learn next? Like, what's the things you struggle with now that you're like really excited about coming up?
The stuff that I struggle with most is like, is the working, is understanding what the clients need. I say clients, but understanding whatever it is that you're trying to build and being able to move that towards a solution that you can actually code out.
So actually, so you said clients, but so do you guys not have clients?
So like at PunchCard, we hate saying the word client. I hate saying this too. We hate saying the word clients because when you're working with somebody else, they're part of the team, right? So they're your teammates or your team members. They're just not with the company. They're just with somebody else, right? So the way we work here, like when you say clients, it means that we're just like, you know, it's just a transaction. They're giving us stuff, we're giving them stuff. That's the end of the relationship. But when you're with a teammate, you know, you're like, you're trying to understand the problems they're facing. You're trying to help them out. They're trying to help you out as well because it's a collective. It's just a, you know, like it's a collective service so that we can get out a product that everyone can enjoy. So we like to say the word teammates. And that's why I say, when I say clients, I don't like saying it, but that's just because it's PunchCard's thing.
No, that's cool. I like it. I think that's actually like a really unique way of looking at it because like, I mean, I was working at agencies before and like 90% of the time, I mean, you know, you have a relationship with the client. You try to be very personal.
Yeah.
Like we would like go into an enterprise, like we'd be like talking to them and like, you know, we're getting to know their team. We're like, actually TravelScale kind of did similar stuff where we're like, we were pairing with people. Like we were big on extreme programming. So like, that was like, we had to pair, but we were like, it's like a fun kind of like way to learn. So we were pairing almost 100% of the time. And then like, we would like work with a client and then like at least some of the work I was doing, like we would literally be sitting there like side by side with the client, like working on a project, like working on a new feature or whatever. And like, we'd be like working directly with them. But like, I like that, like you're saying, like, you know, they're not like, cause it, I mean, really like, if you think about like, even like if you're going to terminology, like, you know, Scrum or whatever, right? Like you've got your product owner and the product owner is the representative of the, you know, the end user. And so that's really like a person from the client, like ideally in a like services environment, like you'd have that team member. So that's cool. So I think I cut you off there. Yeah. So you were talking about like how you actually work with the like your team members or the client or whomever you're like delivering value with, like you're taking their ideas and turning them into.
Yeah. Into digital solutions. Sometimes it's not that it's difficult, but other team members get really excited about the value that you're providing. So, you know, they're like, we have this great idea. You know, you have your sprint planning meeting. You guys have like decided on the things you want to build. It's great. The mid sprint meeting rolls up and they're like, I had like six great ideas that I want to include in this sprint. And you know, you don't want to tell them no, because obviously it's an idea. It's the project that we're working on. You know, you want to see it succeed, but you also have to realize that like the scope of the things and the amount of time you want things delivered in, you know, that they don't match up. So it's just, for me, my struggle is finding that balance between letting your other teammates bring these new ideas and incorporating them into the project at the same time, respecting the amount of time you have in a sprint with the amount of resources that you have on that specific project. So that's still something I'm still working on, because, you know, like, they're like, I want this new feature, and me trying to be nice and, you know, like trying to make sure that they have a good relationship. I'm like, sure, let's do it. And I'm like, immediately as I say sure in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I should not have said that, because the scope has now increased.
Yeah, for sure. And then, so do you, when you do like a sprint, how long is a sprint for you guys?
I think it's like 2 or 3 weeks.
2 or 3 weeks, okay.
Yeah, it's not too short, because I think what at PunchCard, like a week sprint is way too short to get really anything like of value out. And I think anything past 3 weeks is way too long, because then that ends up being like, you might as well just be a waterfall project at that point. But
yeah, I'm just curious, because like, yeah, like, because I've had that in like I've had that problem at like a grander scale, like when we have like, you know, a whole project and we've got like these set things that we want to do, and then, you know, priorities keep changing sprint to sprint. But I don't think I've ever had it where like we intentionally like modify the sprint like every sprint or like very frequently. So I'm curious, like, do you guys do like design up front? Do you, or what do you, how do you typically end up at the?
So it's like an iterative process. So we have like a design team. Usually they'll mock up some stuff in Figma, if you're any familiar with that. So get some wireframes out. We show them to our other teammates. They, you know, they are like, cool, like this looks great. They give us feedback on how it looks, on how the wireframes look, if there are any changes that they want to do or they want to make. We do that before our sprint planning meeting. And then when we're in our sprint planning meeting, we delegate out what is the most important to the least important of features that we want to get out for the sprint. At the same time, we're still making changes to our wireframes while we're starting to work on the project itself, so that from day one, if we're starting a new project, we can at least show them that we have something out. So usually we try to get like, what is it, a UAT site out, so that they can go and mess around with things. If it's a website, if it's a web app, if it's a mobile app, we use App Center. So we try to get out like maybe like a bare bones build, so we can at least show them that we have like an app that they can use. And if the problem is more defined, then we start working on it like from day one. And what we try to do is like every 2 or 3 days, try to get something that is functional so that they can go and review it. So like, say it's like a form and it has like 4 fields in it, but it doesn't have any validation in it. And it doesn't have like a disable. Once you hit submit, you can smash it like a trillion times, but you know, like get them understanding, like if they have external users that are using this, like understand how a user would go throughout their application and use it. And if it works in the same, in a similar way of how they think it is, then we can continue onwards and iterate. But if there are things that they would like to change, at least we haven't made it too far ahead, so that we can still make those changes and still be able to provide value at the end of the sprint.
Okay. And you're doing that, like you're doing new wireframes through to high fidelity, like actually through to like finished feature at each sprint.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Which makes sense. Like if you're working on like, if I imagine you're working on like a part of a larger application when you're doing that, right?
Yes, exactly. It's not like we're doing the entire application and then it's just like, oh, these screens have changed. Now rework what you've just done. It's usually just like the baseline, depending on where you are in the project. Like if it's at the beginning, just the baseline, and then the most important feature, you know, like you get the skeleton of it in. The skeleton of the flow of how a user would use it, the functionality so they could test it out. And once that's in, then we can start building on top. And they verify that that's how it is intended to be. Then, you know, we continue onwards.
That's really cool. Okay. Yeah. Cause yeah. I can see how like, yeah. And then like, if you have the client there and you're showing them like new demos every few days, then I imagine that they have input and then you change kind of a few things here and there.
Exactly. Right. It's a way to prevent us from, you know, where you you spend 2 weeks, you build something, and then the end of 2 weeks, you show the client, they're like, no, this is not what I was thinking. You're like, cool, there goes 2 weeks. I guess we're back to the drawing board again. That way, you know, the expectations that we have and the expectations that our teammates have, it's an easier way to gauge that. And it's an easier way to gauge that, to know that we're on the right path.
And then do you guys have are you working hands-on? Like your team has like a dedicated designer that's constantly kind of revising the wireframes?
Yeah. So we have a design team at our company with we have 3 UX UI designers.
Okay. Yeah.
That can also, one of them actually does front-end development as well. So
okay,
what he does is he'll build out the screens in Figma. He'll deliver it to our other teammates. They verify that's cool. Then he'll actually try and put up a super, super, super MVP type thing where he has the layout of how it would work. And then, you know, they're like, cool, this is what we're, you know, this is the flow that we're expecting. This is great. And then once that's good, we just start building from that point onwards. And it's interesting. It's fun.
That's really cool.
It's pretty funny too. I've never really talked to anybody else outside of my coworkers about this stuff. So this is this is new to me as well. So I think it's great that we can talk about this stuff and you get what I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's cool. Cause it's interesting. Cause I've primarily spoken with people, you know, from the same company as me, I guess most of the time, or in the same, I think in Toronto, there's such a cross-pollination now of everyone's worked at multiple different companies, and you meet someone, they're like, oh yeah, I used to work down the street. and everyone's on the same street, right? There's the one street of offices.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny. It's a different approach than any of the agencies that I've worked at in Toronto, but all the agencies I worked at in Toronto worked pretty well the same. They have you know, not quite the same. We would do more big design up front, I found. Mm-hmm. And we'd iterate sprint by sprint. So that's why I was asking about tweaking it over the course of it. We would use either a 1 week in tribal scale, and then depending on the client at the other company I was at. And I mean, when you're freelancing, it's always different every single time. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's cool. Cause it's we would do it. We would design it, and then we would start building it, and then we'd test it with the client. You get a demo day every Friday or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then that way you're kind of tweaking things. But I don't think we would make that many big changes. I think a lot of the time we were selling these design sprints up front. And so people would do a design sprint. They'd come up with some sometimes it'd be all over the place. They'd be like, all right, what if we made this into an Alexa skill?
Oh,
not a website, you know? so it's very, very up there, pie in the sky, which is, I mean, you got some cool products out of that as a result, right? Some clients, they're like, oh, you know, we really want to build our own, reward system. And then you're like, okay, yeah, cool, cool, cool. Talk about it. And then you find out okay, what they really want is they should just build a Shopify app. And then they get 90% of what they want, you know? So I think that's more I guess I don't even know what that is. That's not quite design per se. It's more solution.
It's a weird mixture of both. I don't even know what to classify it as. Cause like I said, we talk about this in our company all the time. So I'm like, this is just normal for us, but
yeah, it's just how you do it. Right.
it's just interesting talking to other people who, you know, who aren't in your geographical area, who are doing things differently. So it's just, I think this is super cool that we're doing this in general.
Yeah, man, it's cool. I'm glad we got to do this too. Cause it's it's kind of funny cause we haven't spoken really, I don't think we've spoken in person since 2016, maybe 2015. You came back one time to visit, and I think we ran into each other.
Yeah, it was such a long time ago. I know, crazy, man, time flies. I swear, 5 years, damn.
You know what? The funny thing is I thought oh, it's time's going so slow for a while. And then, you know, you hit 28 and you're or 27, you're
just that's the same thing. I hit 27 in April, and I swear to God, I thought last month was July, and it's almost November. Time just flies. You're just what the hell's going on? I'm just getting older.
Especially when you're working from home, right? Every day is the exact same over and over. You get up, you go to your desk. You don't even leave the house sometimes most of the time.
Exactly, right? I'm like, Monday is Friday, Friday is Monday. There is no difference. It's a day. Oh, man. It's the work, like I said, the working from home thing is great if this wasn't a pandemic and you could go to other places. Gotta love COVID.
It's interesting though, because like I think like, you know, I always thought that the future of work was like remote, right?
I agree.
And I remember like always just going on and on about it, like ranting. Like I read a bunch of books in university, and I was like, all right, you know, like this is the future. Like I gotta get on this. I gotta be like Tim Ferriss from now on, 4-hour work week. And I worked in an office for a few years, and I'm like, shit, like I kind of liked it, you know? So I'm trying to figure out how to replicate that like in real life. Cause you know, the thing about going from university to working full-time in an office is you're basically going from one spot where you've got this like centralized friend group or whatever, like built-in social gathering. And then you go to an office and you've got your built-in social gathering. And then you work from home and you're like, you know, you really can't see each other. You don't need to. And then it's just like, huh, what do you do?
Like for us, we do our weekly meetings on Tuesdays. So like we try to do like an icebreaker. Well, we try to do icebreakers that get people just talking about like anything in general that isn't work stuff. Just so, cause you know, especially working in a pandemic, you're like, all you do is work. And then you try to relax. If you live in an apartment, that's hard to like find downtime because your workspace is your relaxed space. So like there's no variation, but we've tried also doing like some virtual games and stuff. We did an Among Us thing, like
okay,
which is pretty cool. Some of the
I haven't played the game, but I heard about it. I think my team plays it on Fridays, so I might.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a great way to get people social and, you know, like getting that same level of sociability that you would get in an office, which is pretty fun. Sometimes, even though, you know, like some of the guys I work with, we go out on Fridays, like in the morning, grab breakfast, social distancing, obviously, but grab breakfast and like, you know, just talk about our weeks and talk about like the things that we've come across in work, just to stay in contact with each other. We try to do like social events every once a month as well, just to keep people, you know, keep people from getting restless and feeling like they're alone. We try to find ways to engage everyone in some way, shape or form, you know, like we do, like we have a Teams channel as well where we're like, hey, you know, like post pictures of your cat or like any crazy stuff that you've done or anything that you find interesting. And we usually try to have like Reddit, you know, like people are like, oh, I found this Reddit post like while I was work, you know, like on my off time. that I think is interesting for other people to see. You know, just stuff like that to try to get other people engaged other than doing work, because you know it sucks when you just do work all the time.
yeah, it's, I mean, like I've gotten into that loop because I think I really enjoy like getting, like solving problems and getting things done, and like that's kind of like been a big driver. I mean, it's, I think for anyone, right? Like you like coding, that's why you get into it, you love it, so then you get into it and then you start doing it. And then it becomes a job, but your job is still a hobby, kind of, but not quite. You know, you're kind of, you know, you start to resent it, I'm sure, eventually. But like, still right now, I'm like, I love this stuff. So I'll like spend all like evening until like, you know, 11 o'clock at night, just continuing to hack away or even just reading for work, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, like I used to do a lot of that too. Not now, not so much, because I find as much as I do love doing that, like I also like being able to relax and like have, like I said, have downtime and like be able to like not have, because you know when you problem solve a lot and you just get into that mindset of where you're like logically analyzing every single thing that you're doing, and then once you leave your computer you're still doing that. I noticed that. Oh, yeah. As well. I'm like,
I used to call it seeing the Matrix. Like you leave and then like you're driving home from work and you're planning your route as if like you're routing network traffic or something.
Oh, definitely. Like it's the same. I was like, I finished work. I think it was like a couple days ago. I'm like, oh, let me make food. And I'm like, measure out the exact ingredients, like the exact timing, the exact temperature. And I'm like, holy crap, what am I doing? It's just I used to do that a lot, and now I'm like, especially because I think just trying to find downtime and relax, is realizing like, you know, there's always a lot of time in your life to solve problems and learn new things, but there's never enough time to just chill and just do nothing. So
yeah, I respect that. What do you do to chill nowadays?
Is this a PG podcast?
Let's keep it safe-ish for work. I don't think anyone listens to this at work.
I am an avid cannabis user, as we you know, it is legal. I smoke it. My girlfriend works at Fire and Flower. If you've ever
worked
that place,
she works. Yeah, one opened up down the street, actually.
Oh, no way! That's awesome. Yeah. She works in the head office in Alberta or in Edmonton here, the customer success lead. So I just smoke a lot of cannabis. When the gym was open, or when I'm not working, literally like till 7, going to the gym. I play a lot of League of Legends, to downtime.
Ooh, nice. Well, I haven't played League since school.
You're not missing much, man. My rage. Oh God, my rage. I can't handle it. Other than that, I hang out with my cat, hang out with my girlfriend. Because it's October, we've been watching like scary movies pretty much all month.
Nice.
We're like, what else do we have to watch in Netflix? Because, you know, also in a pandemic, you just kind of go through Netflix's, Amazon Prime's, whatever content you can find. And then you realize not enough content. And you're like, oh, I guess I should try some new things. So we started watching a bunch of horror movies.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any recommendations?
Ooh. I thought originally, when I was younger, I thought The Conjuring was really scary. We rewatched that. It's still scary. It's not as scary as I thought it was.
Do you think it's because you already know it, or because it's dated? Like, if I watched it fresh, I don't know what's coming up because I haven't watched it. Do you think it'd still be scary?
It'd be scary. It would be scary. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's because I already watched it. I was like, I'm good. But actually, I don't know. My girlfriend said that she watched it already. So yeah, actually, I think you're right. It'll be good. Right. It is a great movie. I thought it was. It has a pretty good story. So
okay,
I'd watch it. You know, lights on though. Lights on. What do you do for downtime?
Oh man, I can't even. I was thinking about that as I was asking. I'm like, shit, I hope he doesn't ask. What do I do? I spend a lot of time like blogging and like writing. And like this podcast has become, but this is like, I talk about code on the podcast. So it's fun, you know, it's kind of chill because I get to like hang out, like talk to people. Like it's fun chatting with you, but like it's still related to work. So I think like it's, you know, that stuff, but like I run.
Nice.
And I've been thinking about getting into some like video games or something like that. That Among Us game sounds pretty cool. Like I hear that you can just like host like a games night party type thing.
Yeah.
Doing that and it'd be solid, right?
Oh yeah. Like we, cause I think you can get Among Us on your like PC and on your phone, but on your phone, it doesn't have like a voice thing. So what we did, we used Microsoft Teams. So we have like two breakout rooms with 10 people inside of it. And basically we're all on, you know, like we're all on voice and we're playing the game. it's pretty funny. And some of the people that we played with, they're older. So, you know, sometimes you'll get in the voice thing, like, how do I like move this thing? And you're like, the thumb stick on the left is the movement stick. You press that, it goes.
<You know? laughs> Oh my God. That sounds great.
I think, if you're going to try to do like a social event thing, Among Us definitely would be the way to go.
Like, I guess my lifestyle is basically just like work and then get off, smoke a little weed, I guess sometimes. And then, hey. I don't know if I should be admitting that. Anyways, it's legal. So like get off at the end of the day and then just chill. Like I'll meet up with my girlfriend. We don't live together. So like weekends and stuff like that, you know?
That's awesome. I mean, it seems like you're doing well, by the way. So I'm happy you're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm doing a pretty, I'm pretty happy with my life. It seems like you're doing pretty damn well as yourself, man.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to hear.
You know, yeah, I was going to say like 5 years ago was a wild time. We were all trying to figure ourselves out. Still trying to figure ourselves out, but less stressful than it was, than, you know, less of it now. So
I don't know if it's less stressful or it.
Actually,
different.
It's different. It's more stressful. I'm older now. Like, we're old. You know how many times I talk about politics and I'm like, I've become that person who just talks about politics. Like, I hate it. I always said when I was younger, I'm like, never. I'm not going to be that guy who's like, opens up the news in the morning and it's just like, man, this planet's going to poo. But here we are.
That's it. Grumpy old men.
Yep. Oh, man.
I still like to think I'm young at heart, but no, I think I was always an old soul. So maybe I've just come into myself, you know.
<You're> like, at the age where I feel I am right.
Hopefully I don't get older and I'll be like, God damn it. I'm not looking forward to that, but one day.
Right. I'm like, now, like, especially with like things, I don't even understand some of these young people things. Like, what is this TikTok business? Like, why is this popular? I don't get it. It's Vine 2.0. Like,
you know what? That's just that. It's Vine. And people really missed Vine. Vine was great.
Which is so funny because Vine closed like 5-6 years ago because it reached its popularity after a year. And I'm like, I see, we're rehashing old ideas into it.
Well, I think at the end of the day, all they have to do is they're just testing it for the next version of Instagram and then just throw that on there. And Facebook will repurpose it for like our generation on Instagram and the older, like the boomer generation on Facebook. And then everyone will have their own little version.
Yeah. They'll just be collecting data there and collecting data there, and everyone's data is everywhere. So it's
and we're worried about China. We should just worry about Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, so fair, so true, so accurate. I watched the Social Dilemma. My God,
is it good?
It's cheesy at points, but it has good ideas behind it, and it makes me question, especially like downloading apps on my phone or like going through certain websites, like, and giving people access to like location or like your file storage or like any of that stuff. It makes me question, especially because we develop, you know, like we work on web apps, we work on mobile apps. So I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I know how much information you can get from just like, oh, give me your location. Now you have like their first and last name because they signed in, because they created an account. And now I have this and this. And I'm like, my data is everywhere. So like, it just makes me conscious about things I let have access, or sorry, let access to my own data, if that makes
sense. Totally.
Yeah.
You know what? I think like, because I always thought like, I remember like Facebook when people were first freaking out about it. I was like, you know what? It's better targeted ads. Like, I want better ads, you know? And like, that's how I always thought about it. And now as I'm getting older, I'm like, I don't want Facebook to know about like what I'm doing. I'm going to delete the app. Like, I don't need this. Like,
exactly. Right. I'm like, I don't need them like knowing I'm looking at this thing at this spot. So now I'm getting targeted ads for like sushi or Walmart or some shit. Like, who needs that?
Well, do you ever get like I have an Android phone and I'll just sometimes get notifications from Google being like, oh yeah, like we saw that you took a trip to this place. And I'm like, how did you know that? And also, you got the wrong address, but it's next door. So I know exactly how you know that.
Exactly. Oh my God. I get those. I have the Pixel 4 XL. So like, anytime I'm like, hey, Google, I'm like, oh, internal cringe. They're just, that search thing that I'm using with voice, they're definitely taking that. My voice, they're definitely taking that. Anytime I use the visual, like, open screen thing with my face, I'm like, oh, God. No. All this data. No.
So I talk about politics literally all the time.
Exactly. We're old. It's just that now. I've come to accept I am old.
I haven't done one of these with, like, a close friend before, so this is kind of funny.
Yeah. This is really fun. This is really cool. I haven't caught up with you in a long time. So like, this is, it makes me think about a lot of stuff. Definitely makes me feel old. Like, and it also makes me feel like I should be more social and, you know, like talking to other people and trying to, just like connect with a bunch of people I haven't talked to in a long time. So
yeah. That's been something that I've been thinking about quite a bit as well. Like, I think it's just, it's so easy to just like think like, oh, you know, like everything's going to come back at some point, or like, oh, these are like, I'm busy, I got to do something else. And then, you know, 5 years later, you're like, man, I really miss all these guys I used to hang out with all the time.
Yeah, it's crazy because they tell you when you're younger, you know, like life happens and you won't have time for a lot of stuff. And then you don't really believe it until you're in it, right? And then you realize, yeah, I don't have a lot of time to like catch up with people, or, you know, like I find I have other priorities that take over that stuff. So yeah, I guess trying to find time. I guess one of the takeaways from this is trying to find time to reconnect with people I used to be really good with. So
Yeah. And I think that's a great sentiment, man. I know, I appreciate that. Like it's, yeah, I feel like that's exactly, you know, that's a great takeaway. And then it's like, I think what you were saying earlier about even just like how you spend your time, like, okay, so you, like we focused on like work stuff, but then it almost immediately, like shortly after that, it was just like, you know, like don't spend all your time working. Like, what's the point, right? Like, it's like,
yeah,
got other priorities.
Yeah, like I guess working in the trades, I used to work like 12-hour days, 6-7 days a week, man. Like I used to love working. I used to be a workaholic. Now I'm like, there's more to life than just working. There is more to life than just working. And
then contrast that with like when we're younger, it's like there's more to life than just partying.
Oh,
it took me a while to learn that one.
You and me both, man. You not nearly as wild as I used to be. Not at all. Not even remotely close. My girlfriend's like, one beer and I'm good. That's where I'm at now. Like the tiniest beer. And I'm like, whoo, that's a lot of alcohol for me. I'm out.
So if you were to like talk to a guy who's literally just, you know, maybe he's in the trades or something like that, right? He's planning on, he's frustrated with his job. He hates work. He doesn't like working 12-hour days every day of the week. You know, he wants to make a move. Like what advice would you give to that person to get to where you are today?
That's a good question. If they have an idea of what they want to do, just go for it. I mean, yeah.
Assuming that they're getting into programming. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of like the spoiler.
Ask help from everybody. Like, take in as much as you can. Is it book? If, you know, like if it's people, like talking to different people, understanding, getting different ideas from people and getting different perspectives from people is great. Because you might understand a problem one way and I might understand a problem a different way, and you're like someone else might understand a problem a different way, but the way that we solve it and the way that we come to that same solution or come to a solution is different for everybody. Reading as many books, as many videos, as many blog posts as you can, and realizing that, you know, take a break and don't sink all of your time into it. You know, you take care of yourself. Mental health is key as well. Just go for it. And I think with hard work and a bit of luck, it's possible for anyone to get into this field.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a set of skills that you learn. And then once you learn them, like you said, you just do them and then you learn to deal with the other problems.
Right. It's exactly that. So it's that, yeah. Takeaway, hard work. Don't push yourself too hard and take everyone's perspectives and opinions in.
Oh, actually, I'm curious, like what's the like Alberta tech scene like? Like, is there any?
Well, we have, do you know Intuit?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Intuit? Yeah, they're actually based out of Edmonton. There was a company that Microsoft also bought out that's in Edmonton. Google... Oh crap, there's an AI scene because of the University of
like Alberta. Athabasca or U of A?
Yeah.
Alberta, University of Alberta.
Yeah, so there's an AI scene that's happening as well. There's a bunch of startups that are also in Edmonton as well. Punchcard made the top 20 startup list of McLean's or whatever that magazine is, so.
Oh shit.
Yeah, there's that.
That actually sounds like literally, you know, like I think when we were in school, that's where like a lot of the Toronto tech scene was at, where it was like people were just like starting a few startups. There's like a bunch of companies, the U of T was like just pumping like talent into different companies. And then like now the big companies are coming over. So it's like changing a bit, but that's kind of funny. So like, I wonder if Alberta is like the next big tech hub, or even like everywhere, I guess.
I would assume maybe, depending on the provincial government, and this is my old person talk, provincial government being okay, then yes, I would say Alberta would be, but otherwise, I don't know, maybe Calgary, maybe. Yeah, it was nice talking to you, but this was great. It was nice catching up with you as well.
Yeah, it was cool to catch up. Like, yeah, I was thinking about it before we started. I was just like, man, like, it's been a while. Like, I was a little nervous, honestly.
Same. I was like, oh man, I don't know what he's expecting. Am I supposed to be super wild? I'm like, I'm not that way anymore. I'm just joking.
No. Yeah. Dude, I actually kept it up for way too long. Like, I think like this last year I stopped drinking entirely.
Oh damn.
Like, I'm still smoking way too much weed, but
bro. Like, bro, I know that well too well. Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, like I had to give up the partying. It was just, I don't know. And then it came right at the perfect time, you know. It was right before COVID hit, and then I was like, all right, well.
Yeah, you're like, I'm good.
I will sit here alone in my room and think.
Wow. Oh, well.
No, not quite like that. I'm just making it melodramatic. I always do.
Fair. I see. That's how we sign off on these Zoom meetings. You're just like, and I sit at home alone in my room. Think.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, this was a blast. Yeah, we should do this again. Definitely. Cool, man. For this again.
Yeah. All right, man. That sounds good.
I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later, dude. Take care, man.
Yeah, see you, man.